All right, it is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. We'll get to overreaction, proper reaction in just a second. But Samter, you know, I know Pat Boyle, our new overnight guy, he does this segment. It's called Boyle Bites. And he basically has everyone send them the food that they're making for the weekend. You could do Samter Snacks. Samter Snacks, because you're a big snack guy. Now, I know this wasn't a snack, but I was, you know, doing the segment in the last hour, the end of the hour, and I saw you, after saying something in the microphone, you immediately cut into something and then devoured it at the end of the segment. What were you eating, just wondering? Because I was distracted by it all through the break, couldn't figure it out, and I didn't want to ask you off the air. I'd rather ask you on the air.
Well, I apologize if I distracted you during the segment because I was just so hungry and it was so delicious. So my apologies.
He's emaciated,
on
that Samter. Let me tell you, you look like you're starving. You're starving Marvin.
If you saw me with my shirt off, you wouldn't see that. But I was very hungry. And so over the weekend, obviously, it's 4th of July. What do you do on 4th of July?
Barbecue.
You grill. Yeah. So yeah. I popped out the grill. I made a Thai peanut and soy chicken along with some steak tips with a beer barbecue sauce that I make.
Mm.
And so I had some leftovers and I was just chowing down on some peanut chicken and some beer barbecue steak tips.
My father, when I saw him this past weekend, he marinated a grilled chicken in this like General Tso's sauce that he found, which I'm a big fan of, but it's not
for grilling.
Yes. Well, it's for anything. I love General Tso's. But it doesn't taste like a tradition. Like when I get General Tso's chicken from a Chinese food place, it doesn't taste like that General Tso's. It's just not as strong of a taste. And I love General Tso's chicken. So it's like a perfect mix into the chicken. It's perfect to marinate that onto the chicken. He grills it and he ends up putting pesto on it. He makes pesto and puts it on it and then burrata. They were killer sandwiches this past weekend. Absolutely delicious. And my parents, they live in a 55-up community, so we went to the communal grills that they have. Like, my parents have a grill in their backyard, but then they have, like, a bunch of barbecues that they have. And someone was barbecuing pizza, which was also really damn good. They, like, I've seen the pizza oven, obviously, that people now get real fancy with, like my friend that lives in the Hamptons. But they made the grill really hot. They homemade the dough. They rolled out the dough, they made homemade sauce, and they were serving up pizza. And then I remember growing up as a kid, my uncle's from Framingham. There's like this massive Boston hot dog that they would always get. It is like a ginormous Boston hot dog. And the table next to us, and my parents are friendly with the neighbors, they were talking about this hot dog and they got him. I guess they're originally from Syosset, and I guess they have these hot dogs in Syosset. So maybe it's not like known for Boston, but I always remember my Uncle Gary, his mom Toby, would bring these ginormous Boston hot dogs. And they had them at the table over. So here I am, right? It was a Friday night? Think of Friday night? Yeah, Friday night. Pizza on one oven or on one grill. General Tso's pesto burrata chicken, and then the massive Boston hot dogs. So that's what I was eating. And then I logged onto social media, and I see that this Boyle's Bite segment is very popular, and everyone's sending all the food items to Pat Boyle. Maybe I should start something, like Grubbing with Gelb, or Gelb's Grubs, Gelb's Grub, something like that. But Samter Snacks could work too. What did you give me before you went on vacation? Because, see, Samter has like a desk here, a little drawer, and Tiki Barber goes there. I see a lot of people, they go into your drawer because they always know you have snacks. And you gave me, it was a root beer something before you went away from Trader Joe's. Delicious.
Yes, it was a root beer. I have some more.
I'm not a big root beer guy, if I'm being honest.
Root beer flavored chocolate. It was delicious.
Connor, you don't think that sounds good?
I don't know if I like root beer and chocolate mix. That's the thing.
And then also, I'm not a mint guy. I really don't like mint.
I've heard that a lot recently from people. Like, people don't like mint anymore.
But I'll tell you this. General. Yeah. I just don't like the taste of it. I had mint chocolate chip ice cream, though, about a month ago. I actually enjoyed it. I tried something. And then usually when I get Girl Scout cookies, I would never get the Thin Mints. But Samter, last time there was a big Girl Scout cookie order, she's like, just get the Thin Mints and thank me later. So I said, fine, I'll do it. And I had the Thin Mints and they were delicious. But as good as the Thin Mints were, you had these, what were they like?
Thin Mint Bites.
Yeah, Thin Mint Bites. That, quite frankly, were better than the regular Thin Mints.
So, I mean, Thin Mints are the greatest, second greatest cookie on the planet behind Oreos, but right there. And
what about
the Thin Mint Bites
are great. Hold on, chocolate chip cookie?
Oreo number one, Thin Mint number two, chocolate chip cookie number three.
If you want to tell me Oreo's number one, but chocolate chip cookie's got to be over the Thin Mints.
Not for me. Thin Mint is, like, for me, the greatest dessert in the history of this planet. You go to Dairy Queen. And they have a Thin Mint Blizzard, where they take the Thin Mint and they take mint ice cream and they blend it all together into a Blizzard. And if you've never had a Dairy Queen Blizzard, it is heaven. And when you put that Thin Mint Blizzard in together, oh my Lord, I cannot see straight after eating that.
You know what I had last night? I made myself dinner and I knew it wasn't enough. I was still hungry. Like, I needed a snack afterwards, but I didn't want to get a gross snack. I went to the Whole Foods here. And I was like, let me just walk up and down the aisles, peruse the aisles, and just see what I'm going to come up with. And I've had ice cream like the last few nights before that, so I didn't want ice cream, even though it was hot in the city last night. I just wanted like a little snack to watch Love Island with. What a statement, by the way, on this national radio network.
Now, if you were just kind of parachuting into the conversation, it would sound like you were talking about, you know, a lady friend. A little snack to watch Love Island with.
Yes. Well, sure. I'm not going to comment on that any further. But anyway, I got Parmesan crisps. Delicious. Absolutely delicious. And a full bag of them was like 350 calories. I housed that bag. I didn't even get through one commercial break. And all the Parmesan crisps were already gone. But absolutely delicious. So that was my snack last night. Can I give you what I think many people would say is an unpopular snack? But I was basically told I had to try it when I do my local hit with Hochman, Crowder, and Solana. This must have been 2 years ago. They have, they it was Channing and Hochman. They love to snack on the seaweed.
Dried seaweed?
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of different flavors. So to make the segment a little bit more fun, I heard them talking about it. They said I had to try it. I ordered it from Amazon. And I tried it. Delicious. Do those expire?
In like 453 years. Yeah, you're fine.
I think I actually still... Now, this was 2 years ago. I think I got like an 8-pack. I still think I have 1 pack remaining in my locker. And I was just done with the seaweed after that.
They are so good. Alexandra, my daughter, is obsessed.
Really?
Yeah, we give her dried seaweed from Trader's. They have a teriyaki flavor. They have an unsalted. And
young
they have a
children have interesting taste buds.
Well, seaweed's actually really good for your digestive tract.
Yeah.
A lot of omega something.
Yeah, it's above my pay grade.
There you go.
My niece, like, she loves blueberries and strawberries. When I was a kid, I don't think I loved blueberries and strawberries. I think when I became an old curmudgeon, I started to like blueberries and strawberries and bananas and spinach and all that stuff. One more, though, in the snack department. The seaweed snacks, though, I think are pretty damn good. But are you on to anything else snack-wise these days? Like when those root beer, what was it, chocolate-covered things are gone and your Thin Mint Bites are gone, like what's the next snack purchase for Moist Mike?
So Trader's has these great little mini ice cream cones.
Ooh.
Like the tiny, like two, maybe three bites and you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all kinds of flavors. They've got chocolate, they've got coffee, they've got strawberry. And then they have like all these, you know, limited time mints and all these other kinds of, you know, peppermint.
Yeah.
During like November, Thanksgiving time, they have like a ginger pumpkin.
Ooh.
Oh, it is so good.
Ginger pumpkin. I don't know how it would
pumpkin
react
ice cream
to
with
that.
A ginger crisp on top of it in a little cone. So good.
Also, you know when you haven't had something in years and it goes back to your earlier years, it goes back to your childhood and you're like, man, I haven't had that in a while, but it's so simple, but it's so good. My mom, when I was home this past week, and she made a chocolate chip banana bread.
Oh.
Oh, my oh, yeah. God.
I love that.
I ended up pouring a scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of it. And your boy was feeling pretty good. I was feeling toasty, if you know what I'm saying. I was enjoying myself with the chocolate chip banana bread with the scoop of just vanilla. I don't know about you guys. When you get ice cream, what's your ice cream flavor of choice? Connor, what's your ice cream flavor?
Normally mint, but I go back and forth between like cookies and cream too.
You go mint?
I'm a big mint guy.
Okay, how old are you? Like 23?
23, yeah.
23? Yeah, so you liked all those flavors when you're 23 and 24. Samter, yourself, what's your ice cream flavor of choice?
Me and Connor must be, you know, separate at birth. Mint and cookies and cream are my go-tos.
Really?
Coffee being a distant third.
Coffee ice cream?
Oh, yeah. You've never had coffee ice cream?
Yeah, I have, I wouldn't say that's in my top three. Honestly, it's going to sound boring. I love soft serve vanilla.
Me too.
You give me soft serve vanilla, and I get a few toppings and things.
Yeah, okay, good. You can't have just plain soft serve vanilla.
But if you tell me that all the toppings are expired and just whatever ice cream you want, plain soft serve vanilla. Delicious.
I lost some respect for you today.
Well, that's fine. I don't think you had much to begin with.
I have plenty. Listen, soft serve ice cream with toppings, wonderful, because you know you don't get the toppings don't take away from the flavor and vice versa. But if you're just having straight vanilla soft serve.
I love it. I don't know why. Like I went to Citi Field last week and I got, it was Dole Whip, but it was vanilla. And then I think there was some other flavor in it, maybe like a peach or something, or a lemon. I forget what it was. And I didn't need any toppings on it. I thought it was absolutely delicious. I'm telling you, vanilla soft serve, that's a weakness of mine. Anything with chocolate and pretzels is a weakness of mine. And then I'll tell you, if you just give me a jar of peanut butter, I'm a happy camper. I love peanut butter. I started to put peanut butter back in my smoothies where I make like a banana smoothie with some strawberries and some raspberries and I throw some spinach in there. For a while, I was leaving out the peanut butter. This week, though, the last 2 days I made my smoothies, or 4 days, if you go back to last week, I've been on a smoothie kick again. I've been throwing a little scoop of peanut butter in there. You give me a rice cake with peanut butter, I'm a happy camper. Very happy.
That's a great combination. Have you ever had celery with peanut butter?
No.
See, it sounds awful. Celery with a little bit.
I would go hummus with celery.
I've never tried that. Oh, yeah, maybe I have. But you take the celery and you put a little bit of peanut butter like down the middle of it.
Hmm.
And also cream cheese down the middle. Delicious.
You know what I'm also have a weakness for? If you give me vanilla soft serve. Like if you say vanilla soft serve, what are the toppings that you're going with?
I mean, for me, if it's vanilla softer, there's got to be some sort of either rainbow or chocolate sprinkles.
Yeah.
Maybe like a
cookie dough bites, M&Ms.
I think the three of us, we might be different, but we're all right here. We're here.
So
right here.
I used to order a lot of soft serve vanilla ice cream in the city, and I didn't realize how close the place was to my apartment, and I may have done so on Uber Eats, so they would have been like $22 ice creams after all the fees and the tipping. That may have been like a 2-year dark period for me where I wasted a lot of money. But when you're doing that so often, you got to try different flavors.
How about strawberry ice cream?
Fine with it. Don't hate it.
Because whenever I say that I like strawberry, everybody thinks I'm a freak.
So no. I would say you're a freak for other things. I wouldn't say you're a freak for that.
Strawberry ice cream's fine when you have it in Neapolitan style with like the vanilla chocolate and strawberry all in. But that's what it's called.
I know. I've never heard that for ice cream.
You know, it's like an all, like the Breyers, you know, chocolate, vanilla, and like the rainbow with the strawberry. And you just take a big scoop with all three at the same time. That's fine.
But anyway, what I've recently been going with my vanilla ice cream, when I go get the soft serve and I walk to the store to actually get it so I don't like spend an arm and a leg every time I'm getting ice cream, is I get crushed Oreos and then a scoop of whipped cream. The crushed Oreos with the spray or scoop of whipped cream is absolutely phenomenal. All righty. So Boyle's Bites, you got some competition. I think we more relate to the common man here, where Boyle's Bites, I think, is too snobby and too fancy. We got Samter Snacks, Grubbin' with Gelb. What are we going to do with Connor? Chowing down with Connor. I'm trying to, like, right? Isn't that the only thing that goes with C? Crunching with Connor.
I like that.
Yeah. The chowing, the CH doesn't work with the Connor.
Yeah.
Crunching or chowing, either one.
Yeah, crunching with Connor. Right here on the Infinity Sports Network. And you could, when Stu gets back, you just smoke him a step. He would be snacking with Stu. Probably easy. All righty, we will take a timeout. That is a 15-minute radio summer segment at its finest right there. And I can't wait till I log on to Twitter at @ZachGelb.
a sports radio show. You're not talking sports. You're talking about food, you fat ass.
Oh, I can't wait for that. For some reason, that just brings me back to, like, the Pharrell days. You know, you fat ass. It's Pharrell on the bench. Remember when he called Jay Gruden a fat ass and then Jay Gruden had to address it at his press conference? I like Jay. We've had Jay on the show a bunch. He does great, especially with the gambling stuff now. I've never asked Jay about Scott Pharrell calling him a fat ass. He used to play that all the time. All the time on the weekend overnights when I was hosting weekend overnight shifts right here on what was CBS Sports Radio, which is now the Infinity Sports Network. All righty, we'll come on back. We'll talk some sports. We got football. We got NFL, college football, all that stuff. We'll do overreaction, proper reaction on a Tuesday when we return in 5 minutes.
Another football week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
Samter, what do we got cooking today, my pal?
Well, we discussed earlier the viral video from the show Quarterback on Netflix of Joe Burrow showing frustration with Zach Taylor after a sloppy Bengals win.
What the f*** are we doing, man? Wake the f*** up! Mental mistakes all f*** day!
Way to finish the day. That's a great drive to finish it. I know it's a frustrating,
embarrassing performance by us. F***ing embarrassing.
And listen, we'll address it. We'll address it, but at the same time, let's enjoy some
f***. That.
We sucked today. That was embarrassing. Okay. We jumped off sides 8 times.
I know that.
Now, while Burrow led the league in passing yards and touchdowns last year, he's just 14-13 as a starting quarterback with no playoff appearances over the past 2 seasons since making back-to-back AFC title games, including a Super Bowl. Overreaction, proper reaction, Burrow is in danger of entering Dan Marino territory of having a great career as a great quarterback who couldn't repeat his early career success.
I think so, and it's not a knock on Dan Marino. It's not a knock on Joe Burrow individually because, right, we look at Dan Marino and his prodigious stats that he put up, and Joe Burrow just led the league in passing yards and passing touchdowns. But you had an opportunity. Unfortunately, you came up short. You had another opportunity the next year. You lose to Kansas City this time around the AFC Championship game, and then you don't go back to the playoffs ever since. So Burrow is in danger of entering Dan Marino territory of a great QB who couldn't repeat his earlier team success later on in his career. I'm going to say that is a proper reaction because you look at this Bengals team. Sure, you have Ja'Marr Chase. Sure, you have T. Higgins. But then you look at the defense. Your best defensive player is Trey Hendrickson. I don't even know if he's going to be there to start the season. And outside of that, that defense... There's a lot more that needs to be improved. So I think that's a proper reaction.
Now, despite saying all the right things last year, Kirk Cousins was clearly unhappy with the Falcons' decision to draft Michael Penix Jr. just weeks after he signed that massive contract in Atlanta. Well, Cousins finally admitted that in another part of the quarterback show on Netflix.
Ended up signing with Atlanta and was pretty excited about the chance to get down there and start fresh. And then, you know, was pretty surprised when the NFL draft happened. Wasn't expecting us to take a quarterback so high. At the time, it felt like I had been a little bit misled, or certainly if I had the information around free agency, it certainly would have affected my decision. I had no reason to leave Minnesota with how much we loved it there if both teams were going to be drafting a quarterback high. But I've also learned in 12 years in this league that you're not entitled to anything. It's all about being able to earn your spot and prove yourself.
Now, overreaction, proper reaction. The Falcons owe it to Cousins to trade him.
I think that's an overreaction. I think you owe it to yourself to do what's in the best interest of the football team. And Michael Penix Jr., even though he's healthy at Washington, he's been healthy so far. Obviously, in Atlanta, he does have a lot of injury history going back to his days at Indiana. And there's not a team with an opening right now. So I'm not just giving him away for free. If someone gets hurt, then yeah, you may owe it to him to put him in that situation, but you got to get something. I don't think there's much to get right now. So the Falcons owe it to Cousins to trade him. I'm going to go with that being an overreaction.
Now, yesterday we heard from Patrick Mahomes, who said Max Crosby was the best pass rusher
that
he's faced.
Fast, right?
Best pass rusher he's faced.
To me, he's the best pass rusher that I've played against. And so, no offense to any other pass rusher, just putting it out there. But he is the best one that I've went up against because he goes out there and he gives you the effort, he has the moves, and he has the skill. And I think that's hard to have all three of those and do that year in and year out.
Now, we've talked a lot about the top four pass rushers in the NFL. Crosby's 27. He's a year older than Micah Parsons at 26. T.J. Watt, Myles Garrett, Trey Hendrickson are all pushing 30 and above. Though there are some rising star pass rushers under 25, including Houston's Will Anderson Jr., the Rams' Jared Verse, and, of course, the Lions' Aiden Hutchinson. So overreaction, proper reaction, Will Anderson Jr. is the best pass rusher under 25.
I'm going to go a slight, and I love Will Anderson Jr., but I'm going a slight overreaction. Verse, I thought he was going to win Defensive Rookie of the Year before the season started. He'll even tell you he left a lot of sacks on the field last year, and he ended up winning Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think the world of Jared Verse. Anderson, I was going to say is, but you look at Aiden Hutchinson. Since entering the league, and he got hurt last year, three seasons, 28 and a half sacks. And I know Will Anderson had seven sacks and 11 sacks. For Aiden Hutchinson, it was 9.5, 11.5, and then 7.5 after getting hurt last year. And Will, last year, Aiden Hutchinson only played in a total of 5 games. So I know that's a concern coming off the injury with the ACL, but I'm going to say that it's still Aiden Hutchinson. So Will Anderson Jr. is the best pass rusher under 25. I'm going to say that's a slight, just the tiniest slight overreaction.
Now, hopefully I can read this one without stumbling, so let's go. The Dolphins have had a turbulent offseason with questions about the future of Tyreek Hill, the health of Tua, Mike McDaniel maybe being on the hot seat, and of
definitely
course...
Definitely being on the hot seat, not maybe. That seat should be on fire!
On fire! And of course, trading Jalen Ramsey to the Steelers for Minkah Fitzpatrick. Now, former Pats corner Asante Samuel ripped the Dolphins as an organization.
Dolphins had no reason to trade Jalen Ramsey, other than they're sensitive. There's no leadership in the Dolphins organization. Mike McDaniels is a pushover. Chris Greer, the general manager,
he has no
backbone. These guys over here, the Miami Dolphins, they are running this team like a little league team. No one can stand up to the players. They're terrified of their own players, and they have no control over their players.
Now, that was from his Say What Needs to Be Said podcast. So, overreaction, proper reaction. The Dolphins are the worst-run franchise in the NFL right now.
The Dolphins are in a horrible spot, and I think they're in the worst spot to be in the NFL because you're not bad enough to get a top five pick, and you're also not good enough to go contend for a Super Bowl. You're in that 8-10 win range. Even though I've been extremely critical of Mike McDaniel, extremely critical of Chris Greer, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're the worst run organization in the NFL. They're up there, but I'm not going to say they're the worst run organization in the NFL, so that's an overreaction.
Now, as Big 12 Media Days kick off in Dallas, Commissioner Brett Yormark spoke first and reiterated his desire for a 5-plus-11 playoff format.
We continue to believe the 5-11 model proposed by the Big 12 and the ACC is the right playoff format for college football. We want to earn it on the field. We do not need a professional model because we are not the NFL.
Now, obviously, as we know, this format includes winners of the Power Four conferences, plus the highest ranked Group of Five winner, plus 11 at-large bids, rather than those at-large bids being automatic bids given to the SEC, Big Ten, or other big conferences. So overreaction, proper reaction, the 5-11 format is the best option available to expand to a 16-team playoff, assuming that they're going to expand. I know you don't want to, but if they did, 5-11.
Yeah, I think that's fine. And even though it hurts his conference because the Big 12 only got one team in last year and they would get two guaranteed in this other format that the SEC and the Big 10, I guess, now want, I respect your mark says let's leave it up to whoever the best teams are on the field. So I'm good with that just being the 5-11 format. No problem with that whatsoever, proper reaction. I will say, though, I'm seeing one quote emerge from Big 12 Media Days, and I'm really just annoyed with it. So Scott Frost is now back at UCF, who says you can't go home. He was asked by Chris Vanini at The Athletic, what did you learn about the Nebraska experience? And he said, don't take the wrong job. He also went on and said I wouldn't leave UCF unless it was someplace you could win a national championship. I just got tugged in a direction to try to help my alma mater and didn't really want to do it. It wasn't a good move. I'm lucky to get back to a place where I was a lot happier. That is a lame, and I mean serious loser energy there by Scott Frost. No one was sitting there and realistically expecting you to win a national championship at Nebraska, right, as the head football coach. You didn't even get bowl eligible, dude. Scott Frost at Nebraska was 16-31. Why wasn't that a good job for you? Because you didn't have the chops to go back to your alma mater and get them back to respectability? And when games got tight late, you urinated down your leg over and over and over again? Like, give me a break. That is such revisionist history and BS by Scott Frost. That's a legend at that university. He was a disaster as a head coach. But you couldn't even just be decent. You couldn't just be okay at Nebraska. You were bad. And don't tell me you can't go to a place that has tough, a lot working against you and go succeed. At UCF, I was there when George O'Leary ended. They had zero wins. You walked in there, I think, at 6 or 5 wins your first year, and then you were undefeated your second year. Like, what the heck are you talking about? Scott Frost, that is lame loser energy talking about his time at Nebraska. Anyway, I wasn't expecting to just go off like that, but as you were reading this about Big 12 Media Day, that quote came up on my timeline about Scott Frost. So you can continue with overreaction, proper reaction.
Overreaction, proper reaction. Scott Frost can win a national title at UCF.
If they want to claim it, sure, maybe. But I would say that's an overreaction.
Now, the Big 12 did make a surprising move this offseason, eliminating their conference preseason poll after last year's champion, Arizona State, was voted to finish last by conference media members before the season. Today, your Mark explained why.
I think it disadvantaged Arizona State last year.
Hmm.
They were picked 16th, and I think that hurt them. And Scott Draber, our chief competition officer, and I discussed this. I think there's no value. And I also feel that with the transfer portal and with roster management and what goes on, you know, as you build that roster, no one knows what they really have. They know what they have on paper, but it hasn't played out. So I don't know if it's a trend or not, but certainly it's the right thing for the Big 12, and I'm glad we did it.
So overreaction, proper reaction. Preseason polls actually do more harm than good.
If you asked me this yesterday, I would probably say that's lame. And I'm not a fan of getting rid of the preseason polls. But the way he explains it, he's right. Everyone's just resting basically off what they did last year. A lot of the times here in their preseason poll, or if one team got a big transfer as a big recruit coming in, and then all of a sudden they skyrocket to the top. But do they do harm? That's the part that I may disagree with, and I'm going to still lean overreaction here, because this is why. If you're ranked poorly, you could use that as motivation, and I think that could actually do some good. And it gives a coach more bulletin board material. So I'm not going to say they do more harm than good. They are pointless. And if you're sensitive, then you could lean into it one way or another. But I'm not going to say they do more harm than good. So I'm going to go overreaction there.
Now, sticking with the Big 12 as media days are underway, coaches like ASU's Kenny Dillingham, Baylor's Dave Aranda, UCF's Scott Frost, the aforementioned, Iowa State's Matt Campbell, and K-State's Chris Klieman all speaking today with other top coaches like Coach Prime, not Dion, Coach Prime.
Yeah, be respectful. We're believers.
Mike Gundy, he's a man. He's 40. Lance Leipold, Rich Rodriguez, and Kyle Whittingham speaking tomorrow. Now, USA Today ranked Dillingham.
Time out. How old do you think Mike Gundy is now?
58.
Connor?
I'm going to say 62.
Ack? You're the keeper of the birthdays here.
I'm going to go 56.
Do you know when Mike Gundy's birthday is?
August 21st.
Pretty close. August 12th, he's 57, about to turn 58, Mike Gundy.
So me and Ack were right there, and I would have been right on, because I said 58 if I guessed a month later.
And Ack, you said 56?
I said 50.
So if it was Price is Right, Ack would win. Come on down. Da-da-da-da. All right, anyway.
So anyway, USA Today put out a ranking, putting Kenny Dillingham as the best coach in the conference, while Sports Illustrated tabbed Gundy as the number one coach in the Big 12. So overreaction, proper reaction. Neither Dillingham nor Gundy is the best coach in the Big 12 right now.
I think Chris Klieman is really underrated. And he won the Big 12 but didn't make the college football playoff because it was four teams. So that was unfortunate for him. Dillingham wins the Big 12 and goes to the college football playoff in a 12-team format. I think Matt Campbell's a solid coach. Lance Leipold's good, had a bad year last year. Coach Prime had a really impressive season last year. How do I not say Kyle Whittingham, though? I know last year that they were bad. But I think the resume and the longevity of success and what Kyle Whittingham has done at Utah. Oh, you said right now, though. Ooh. The right now changes it for me. They were last in the conference last year. Last. And projected last, Dillingham. So, yeah, maybe this is in the moment. You asked me neither Dillingham nor Gundy is the best coach of the Big 12. And I'm not going to say it's Gundy. At this point in the year last year with Ollie Gordon. But I'm going to say Dillingham probably is the best coach right now. Keyword, right now in the Big 12. So I will go, that is a overreaction because of the Dillingham factor in that. All right, that's a little overreaction, proper reaction. We will take a break. We will come on back, and we will get into the news brief when we do return. We'll update some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with somebody. We'll get to a news brief on the other side. Update time first. Here's Zach.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, let's get to a news brief here. We'll go back to Big 12 Media Days. Brett Yormark, who's been in favor of this 5-11 format, he did discuss on the Big 12 in the college football playoff moving forward.
We continue to believe the 5-11 model proposed by the Big 12 and the ACC is the right playoff format. For college football, we want to earn it on the field. We do not need a professional model because we are not the NFL.
And then also let's hear cut seven on Brett Yormark on the Big 12 and the CFP.
I fully expect the Big 12 to earn multiple college football playoff bids this year. And to show once again that we can compete with anyone.
So I appreciate his confidence. I will say this, though. We talked about college football being a game of tug-of-war now. You have the two big boys at the top, the SEC and the Big Ten. They're competing for who's the best conference. Then you're competing for, in the other game of tug-of-war, who's the third and fourth best conference. Last year, the ACC, because SMU just narrowly lost to Clemson in the ACC championship game, they got two teams in from the ACC. The Big 12, though, who had a good year last year, solid year last year, but they beat up on one another, they only got one team in. So I respect Yormark in the regards of he's betting on his conference and saying, hey, I don't want two guaranteed spots. Let's just do who the best 16 teams are in that 5-11 format. This year, it's going to be 12, and that's how we decide it. But in most years, I don't think you're going to get two in unless if it's guaranteed. And this year, do I think that the Big 12... it's likely that they get two teams into the college football playoff? Probably not. You know, Arizona State has a lot of buzz right now. So if Arizona State has a really good season, they lose in the Big 12 championship game, there's probably an appetite to see them again. But I'm not going to, if you put a gun to my head this year and said, Zach, one team or two teams in the college football playoff in the Big 12, I'd say, Kamish, I respect your confidence, but I would say it's probably one team in the college football playoff. Let's go to Kevin Pritchard on the Pacers. Obviously runs a show there on allowing Tyrese Halliburton to play in Game 7.
He's told me many times, this just shows you what kind of kid he is. I would do it over and over. And if you're asking me, would I have him do it over and over? I would not. I would not. If I knew that he was going to get hurt, I would sacrifice that game because I care for the kid so much and want him to have an incredible career.
Where do you stand on that, Mike? Because the player said he doesn't regret it, but then the front office executive says that he regrets. If he would have known he would have got injured, he wouldn't have played him. You played him, remember, in game 6 of the NBA Finals, you won. Then you played him again in game 7, and that's where he suffered the injury. I think it's a nice thing for Kevin Pritchard to say, hey, if we knew obviously he was going to get hurt, we wouldn't play him. But I thought it was still the right decision to play him. And I was someone who said at the time after game 5, hey, I hear a calf injury. I think of Kevin Durant and this could turn into Achilles. And we all thought we got away from it in game 6 because he looked fine. He looked better than advertised. And then game 7, that's when, unfortunately, you get the Achilles pop.
I mean, they had like the worst of both, right? They lost the game and they lost Halliburton, right? So like, let's say they lost Halliburton for this year and they won game 7. It would have been worth it, probably.
Well, obviously it would have been. If you got hurt in game 7 and they won?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, but they lost him for the whole this year. Of course, it would have been worth it. Had he stayed healthy and they lost the game, it still would have been worth it because you have him for this year. The fact is they lost Halliburton for this year and they lost the game. So, of course, Kevin Pritchard has to say that.
But here's the thing. I may be, and I'm not faulting him for what he's saying. I maybe would have said, obviously, we didn't want this outcome to be the way that it is, but we did what Tyrese wanted to do. It's something that we thought we was fine with, and unfortunately, he's out for the season. In the back of my mind, if I'm a Pacer fan, here's what I'm not upset about, even though he's out for all this year. When are you going to get back? And I know they made the last two conference finals. Are they ever going to get back to the NBA finals? I can't guarantee that. So I don't want to ever play that doubt of, oh, you have them for all next season. What happens if they are 4-5 seed next season, they get bounced in the first round? So even though it's the juice, it's weird to say juice worth the squeeze here because it was such a negative outcome, but there's a risk and the reward. The risk was high and the reward was high. You got to play dangerous sometimes when it comes to winning an NBA championship. Let's go to Clayton Kershaw. He ended up making the All-Star game because of the legend selection. This is Clayton Kershaw on that.
Well, I'm super honored to get to go. You know, it's you never take for granted getting to go to an All-Star game, regardless of the circumstances. You know, obviously don't deserve to get to go this season. Haven't pitched very much, but, you know, regardless of the situation or how I maybe snuck into the All-Star game, it's pretty cool to get to be able to go.
I have no problem with it, but it's just weird to me when you're admitting that the All-Star game is to put the biggest stars in the game, even if they're not having great seasons, and a guy like Juan Soto, who is top 10 in home runs, top 10 in OPS, doesn't make the All-Star game. There's no consistency there. If the goal is just to get the biggest stars, not the best players right now, well, then Juan Soto's still having a very good season. He should be in the All-Star game. I'm actually going to Chicago in August for a weekend. And I'm going to UFC on Saturday night, and then that Friday during the day, we land, and there's a 2:20 p.m. Central Time game up against the Pittsburgh Pirates, Cubs and Pirates. I'm hoping that Paul Skeen's going to be on the mound. And I'm looking very forward to going to Wrigley, right? Never been to Chicago before. And I'm not a big take-me-out-to-the-ballgame guy anymore, but that's so iconic at Wrigley Field. I was looking forward to it until I heard Alex Cooper, who's a great podcast host on Call Her Daddy. And Alex Cooper had this rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
All right, Daddy Gang and Cubs fans, are you ready? You've never seen something like this before. A one, a two, a three.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Mommy, some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care. Root for the Cubbies. If they don't win, it's a shame. So it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
That was terrible. If this was American Idol back in the day, Simon Cowell would have said, no, never sing again. Paula Abdul would be like, honey, it's just not for you. And Randy Jackson would be like, that's a no from me, dog. That was brutal. She makes William Hung look like a good singer. That was horrible. And that was the in-house feed. I saw a video from the stands. Hellaciously booed. Like overpowering boos. Where if you're sitting in the stands, you can't even hear that. And thank God, that's probably why the people were booing, because it was so bad. Terrible. Gilberto Zurdo Ramirez, he was asked, would he fight Jake Paul? This is on TMZ Sports.
Everyone know, I don't think it will be a fair fight because obviously I'm a champion and he's slow and he threw the punches like so wild. And but I don't know why he's like talking shit about me.
Is that even on your radar? Could that potentially be the next fight?
Yeah, I mean, if the money is right, why not? Easy fight for me, easy money. I will beat Jake Paul.
You could like or hate Jake Paul. I give him credit for all this fighting stuff. We all thought it was a gimmick, and obviously it's been the complete antithesis of that. Let's go to Christine Brennan. She was on with Maggie and Perloff earlier this morning, and she talked about the Caitlin Clark hate in the WNBA.
look at the way Paige Bueckers talks about Caitlin Clark. And Paige is a great player, but she can't sell out her 7,000-seat arena in Dallas, right? So we need reality here. And Paige understands that. She knows how big a deal Caitlin Clark is. Whereas some of the players in their 30s who've had these small crowds, you can understand that might be a little tougher, whether they're black or white, right? I mean, Taurasi went after Caitlin Clark in very unflattering and completely incorrect terms. Brianna Stewart had to kick her in the shins in comments at the Women's Final Four. I have all that in the book. It wasn't just black players. When they move along, when they maybe age out, well, you're going to get a whole different group of young people who look at Caitlin Clark and understand the magnitude because they played against her. They respect her. And she's not intruding in their world. It's all their peers now.
Yeah, it's jealousy now. And in 10 years from now, the players that are up and coming are just going to respect Caitlin Clark out of the wazoo. Finally, here's Andrew Perloff interviewing Tony Khan on our Great Morning Show.
So, Tony, I looked at my weather app. It's not going to be so super hot, but it's definitely going to be warm. Not really for the fans, but the performers are going to be sweating a lot here.
There's a roof.
You're good.
Oh, blow my Maggie, you didn't tell me there's a roof.
Do I have to tell
it's
you that?
It's a sports show. You guys, you're sports reporters. You know, there's a roof on Globe Life Field.
Well, there's still humidity stadium to deal with.
So I guess there's an AEW event at Globe Life Field in Texas. That's where the Rangers play. And Perloff didn't know that there was a roof. That's actually a very funny listen. But, like, let's be real. People are going to lose their mind. Oh, Perloff has to know that. Does he really? All right, come on. They're doing Tony a favor. They're having Tony on the show for just being honest right there. All righty. We will take a timeout. When we come on back, we will get into some coach QB team expectations for this upcoming year in college football. Be back in five. Julius Juju Ballo, also up and coming boxer, getting set for his first pro fight at the end of the month, will join us at 5:20 p.m. Eastern time as well.